This is Michael reporting from Rome. Today I will be interviewing Monsignor Paul Tai, the Secretary of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications in Rome. Monsignor Paul Tai was appointed by Pope Benedict in November 2007. He was born in Navan, County Meath, Ireland, on 12th of February. He graduated from UCD in 1979 with a degree in law. He then studied for the priesthood in Clonliffe College, Dublin, and at the Irish College in Rome. He was ordained a priest for the Dublin Diocese in 1983. After his ordination, he served in a very formal parish. Monsignor Paul Tai also lectured in moral theology in Meditate Institute of Education in Dublin, and my sister, Clenny, was one of his students in the same college. In 2004, he was named Director of the Communications Office in the Diocese of Dublin before coming to work in Rome. I asked him questions about himself and his work and why he decided to become a priest. I also asked him if his council presents the Pope's messages for people with Down syndrome in an easy to read format. Thank you for answering questions today, and thank you for having me over today, Paul.
Thank you very much, Michael, and welcome to Rome.
Thank you. Where are you from in Ireland?
My dad worked in local government, which meant he moved around a little bit. But I grew up in Navan, County Meath, and I was there until I was about 13 years of age. And then my family moved to Sligo, lived there for 3 or 4 years, and then they moved again to Dublin. So I ended up moving to Dublin when I was about 17 years of age. So really, I suppose I'm most likely, best place to say I'm from Navan, but because my mother was also from Sligo, Sligo is a very strong point of connection for the family, and I feel probably most at home when I cross the Shannon and get down the west of Ireland.
As a young person, where did you go to school?
I was in a number of schools. My first school I ever went to was with the Loreto Sisters in Navan. I was there from the age of 4 until I was about 8, I think. And then I went to a school run by the De La Salle brothers in Navan from age of 8 to 12. Then I did about 6 months in a secondary school in Navan called St. Patrick's Classical School. And then I finished off, I did most of my secondary school at Summerhill College in Sligo.
And why did you decide to be a priest?
When I was around 15 or 16 years of age, I'd been thinking what I wanted to do. And I had been looking seriously at a number of different options. My strengths were always in the area of science and maths and that sort of stuff. But I was looking at medicine. I wanted to do something that I felt would help people. And I suppose medicine was kind of a very obvious choice for me in that. But somebody I know was quite sick at around that stage. And I remember seeing that that person got enormous help and support from the church, that his faith was a big, big help for him in rebuilding his life after an illness that originally had required physical care and attention, but that in rebuilding his life, his faith became so important to him. And suddenly I realised that maybe a way of being a doctor, maybe a way of helping people was to share with them the gospel, because I'd always had a strength of the closeness of Jesus, which was a huge help for me growing up. And in many ways, I felt that that was something I could share with other people. And that was a relatively naive idea of what priesthood was, but it was about wanting to bring people good news that would support and help them on their journey through life.
When did you first come to Rome?
I first came to Rome as a student in 1980, when I had finished my law degree in Dublin. I'd done some philosophy in Dublin, and then it came time to start studying theology. And I was offered the opportunity of coming to live at the Irish College in Rome and studying at the Gregorian University. So I was in the Irish College from 1980 to 1983. I absolutely fell in love with Rome, still love Rome, and it's a great city in which to study. I came back then later on in the later part of the 80s and did postgraduate work again at the Gregorian University, and I lived in the Teutonic College, which is a German college within the Vatican. So I finished up there in 1990 and returned to Dublin, never anticipating that I'd be back in Rome again, and then I was appointed here in 2007.
I know Pope Benedict appointed you. How did you get the news?
I remember it well. I was sitting at home on a Friday evening after a busy week at work, and I had ordered a very nice takeaway from a Thai restaurant that was near me at the time. I was living in Cabra. I was just about to tuck in when the phone rang, and it was the Papal Nuncio, and the Papal Nuncio said he needed to see me urgently the day after. And I knew there must be something up. So I rang my Archbishop Dermot Martin, and he began laughing. He didn't say, he said, "Oh, well, tomorrow, I couldn't tell you, but tomorrow you'll have to meet the nuncio, and there's a surprise for you." So after a night in which I didn't sleep too well, the following morning I went to see the Papal Nuncio, who told me that I had in fact been appointed to the job, that the Pope had already made the appointment, and that I had 3 hours to think about it, and I could say no, provided there was something that they weren't aware of that, you know, would block me from saying yes. And he said, "We already know that your parents are nearly 80, and that won't be an excuse. That won't be a good enough excuse." So I had no real choice. But I must say, often in life, they're the best things, the things that other people choose for you.
Social communications are your responsibility. Do you have easy-to-read versions of the messages that you are communicating for Down, with Down syndrome?
One of the things I'm very conscious of is that we have to learn to communicate with everybody, to be much more inclusive in our way of communicating. I've learned that at home more than anything, because one of my brothers has very little hearing. He had an accident as a child, and his hearing has deteriorated quite significantly. So I suppose I've had to learn things, how to, even in ordinary family conversations, make sure that Michael is part of the conversation, that he knows what's going on. So you learn, we've all as a family, we had to learn things. My father had to learn that you can't talk to my brother with his pipe in his mouth. That wasn't because my brother needed to lip read. My brother's children who grew up with him never talked to him without touching him first, so to alert him to the fact that they want to talk with them. And that for me has become a metaphor, an example, that we must be attentive within the church. It's not what we want to say that's important, but it's the fact that we want to make sure that the good message, the good news of Jesus Christ, is made available to everybody. And that means needing to think about a simplicity in our language. It means with a younger generation to be much more visual in our communications. And there was a friend of mine who worked in Sligo with people with different mental abilities and different levels of engagement. And I remember that they developed a whole style of liturgy, celebrating the Mass, with song and music and colour, which are engaging people. And I think this is a hugely important thing, because there are people with different abilities and different capacities and different ways, and it's a requirement that we be inclusive. I must say I've learned a lot about this, because very often we're inclined to think that people are excluded because of some disability they may have. But the reality is, it's up to the community to make our venues more inclusive. And that's everything I know in the churches, from can people hear? Can people who need assistance to walk, can they get into our churches? Is our way of doing our business something that keeps everybody engaged? And I think that's a real challenge for us, to be inclusive. And one of the things I like is that increasingly now people will tell us what the problems are, right, and say that I feel excluded, or you didn't mean it, but you know, that wasn't helpful for me. And I think we've had to learn to be much more, all organisations have it, but I think for us more than anything else, because God's love is so inclusive. God's love is for everybody. And the one thing we shouldn't be doing is blocking that message by our own lack of attention, by our own lack of consideration. So in talking to people generally on this moment, I would say, look, please never be afraid to tell us what we're doing wrong. to tell us what's not helpful so we can learn from that.
How important is Facebook in hearing the Pope's message?
The Pope's message is being put across in loads of different ways. We have a Pope who communicates, we can see very clearly in his way of teaching and his way of talking, but he's a man who communicates also spectacularly well with gestures. And one of the things we've noticed, we in the Vatican in general, there's a radio station, there's a newspaper, there's a TV station, there are loads of people working with social media. But I suppose what we begin to see with Facebook is in Facebook, people aren't so much interested in the news or the long speech. They're interested in the photographs and sharing the images and sharing the ideas and commenting about those and discussing them. So one of the things that Facebook has become very important for us is you begin to realise most people today are accessing Facebook on a mobile device, which means you're not going to read a lot of text. It also means images or video are at the core of it. So what I've probably learned is what we've had to learn here with Facebook, and we're using Instagram a little bit as well, is the importance of the images and the photographs, which for me is a way of maybe stimulating the interest. The person gets interested enough, God, this man seems fascinating, or this man seems different. And then if they want to learn more, we have other materials which they can read, or they can listen to a longer talk, or they can find a commentary. But for me, Facebook is a very important part of our entry-level discussion with people.
My last question is, when will we see you back in Dublin again?
Well, I'm back in Dublin regularly enough because my next trip to Dublin is, I've already booked it the other evening on the, I think it's Friday the 7th of February until the 11th of February. 11th of February is a Tuesday and it's a day off for us in the Vatican. So I'm going to take the Monday off as well and get home for 4 days. My dad unfortunately died a few years ago, but my mum is now, I better not say in case this is on, she's older and it's important that I get home to see her as much as I can. And then I have brothers and sisters scattered across Ireland. So usually if I go home, there's a trip to the west of Ireland as well as part of that. And then I have lots of friends and people I taught over the years. But I have to say, probably since I've come here, I've had to focus the effort on being here and doing the work here. And when I get home, increasingly it's just a bit of time with family and catching up with friends. But good friends understand that and make allowances for it.
Did you have a good Christmas with your family?
I had a very good Christmas because I'd had a very busy last couple of months before I went home. I'd been travelling a lot and I went home feeling terribly tired. And I rewarded myself a longer than usual Christmas holiday. I took nearly 2 weeks. And I don't think I was up before 10 any morning. And probably put on about half stone of weight in 2 weeks between the good old Irish breakfast. And as you know, the weather in Ireland this Christmas was not particularly good. But I did get out and get some walking. And then one of the things that's nice now, my mother doesn't drive. And when I come home, I always rent a car. And it means I can take her down the country to. So we spent a couple of days in Clare with one of my sisters. And then we went down to Sligo another time and met some of the rest of the family. So it's always very nice to get home at Christmas. And then it was a great chance to see friends. And Christmas is great because there's not too many temptations to do anything other than meet people. So plenty of rest, too much eating and lots of friends.
Well, thank you very much for the interview today and thank you for your help, Paul.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Michael Gannon, signing off.